council whenever you're ready. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Nathaniel Mustin. I'm here representing the appellant, Doug Doolin, in this matter, or Doug, as I will be referring to him as during this oral argument and as I did in my brief. This is an appeal from a district court dissolution of marriage action which was tried to the court below. In issuing its decree, I believe the district court erred in two overarching ways. The first in the way that it divided the marital estate. Specifically, it erred in three ways in dividing the estate. First, by valuing the Fidelity 401k plan as of the date of filing of the divorce. Second, by not considering the dissipation of marital assets by the appellee. And third, by awarding all the marital debt to Doug. The second overarching error the court made was by awarding attorney's fees to the appellee. I'm first going to talk about the division of marital assets. The purpose of a property division is to distribute the marital assets in an equitable way to the parties. I think it is especially crucial in this case to equitably divide the marital assets. You have to look at the history of contribution from these parties. Quite literally,
is the first step to determine what the marital estate consists of?
That's correct, Your Honor. And
is there some dispute on that because of some of the money that was taken from the 401k account, and I think Mary took it and put it in a safety deposit box?
Yes, and I think that goes to the first overarching error, the division of the marital assets, but I think it's two separate questions and two separate issues. The dissipation of marital assets, you're absolutely correct, Your Honor. There was three large cash withdrawals made by the appellee during a time, early 2014, when the marriage was going through an irretrievable breakdown.
But wasn't the money originally taken by your client and placed into a joint checking account?
Yes, that was the practice all during the marriage when they started living off the 401k. My client would take it from the 401k, put it into the marriage's joint checking account where both parties had access to debit cards and could make cash withdrawals. And that's what happened in that instance. They were living off the 401k during that time when she was making those cash withdrawals. So, yes, that was 401k money.
And did she take that money out of the checking account during the time that he was out of state?
Yes. Yes. In early 2014, Doug still was not working. He was still undergoing some mental health issues, and he was on the road looking for work out of state. And that's when these cash withdrawals were made. And yes, they were withdrawn from the joint checking account in cash and placed into a safety deposit box that Doug knew nothing about, didn't have access to it. And then still, the only reason we know what happened to that money is from trial, from the appellee's testimony. She said that she stuck it in there, bought herself a lake house, and then just spent the other money. Which she said she didn't remember what happened to the rest of it.
Let's back up again.
Sure.
To the source of the money.
Sure.
So my understanding is that when he was getting ready to go on this trip, he was hoping to have some pleasure time also on the trip, but also look for a job, and he wanted her to go along.
Yes.
And she didn't want to go.
Correct.
So is that the first evidence that there was a problem with the marriage?
Yes, both parties at trial testified that's when the breakdown occurred.
And after that time, he continued to move money from the 401k into the checking account?
Yes, because he was still trying to work on the marriage. They hadn't separated at that point. That was just the beginning of the breakdown. He was still trying to talk to her, was still trying to help her live. By putting that money in there and allowing her access to it. And that's why the valuing of the 401k was so unjust at the time of filing. The evidence is clear from the appellee's testimony and the banking records that were offered into evidence. She continued to draw on that 401k well after the filing of the divorce. So she benefited not only from using that money, but from the court shifting $58,000 of non-existent assets into Doug's column in the division of property, a wholly unjust result to Doug.
Can we talk about the, you say she bought a lake house?
Yes, she did.
Was it a lake house or was it a
camper?
Camper.
A lake trailer.
Which is where, and she, they had minor children? No.
No, they did not, Your Honor. She had a child from a previous marriage that I believe was living with her at that time that Doug was still taking care of, essentially. But yes, she purchased the trailer out at the lake, Red Willow County Lake, and Doug never had access to it.
He did some repair work on it.
Yes, he did some repair work, never got to enjoy it, and in fact, wasn't able to take care of it, and ultimately ended up getting condemned by the county and became a worthless asset. So that asset that she purchased with that money that she took out didn't even benefit the marriage because it became a worthless asset because she didn't take care of it.
Was it a worthless asset by the time the matter came on for trial?
Or did yes, it was. Afterwards? It had been condemned by the time we got to trial.
And what was the amount that was paid for the facility?
$20,000, Your Honor.
And did it have any value at the time of the trial?
No. Actually, probably had negative value because the county wants it removed, so there's actually a liability that comes along with that trailer.
And that was assessed to her?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And then, so the dissipation of marital assets, the court didn't take into account. It valued the 401k at an inappropriate date. And then finally, the award of all of the debt to Doug. The debt was incurred mainly, came out at trial, mainly from that time period Doug was on the road looking for work. And I believe that's probably the reason why the court awarded all of it to Doug. I'm assuming the court didn't think that was benefiting the marriage, him being on the road looking for work. I wholly disagree with that. Again, he was trying to get a job that would have benefited the marriage. He was still trying to work on the marriage. He had it in his mind if he could get a job, he could reestablish an income for the family because that 401k was running out.
Well, wasn't the bulk of that money spent on him doing some repairs to whatever he was driving at the time?
Yes.
New canopy or?
Yeah, there was a Winnebago or a camper that I think Doug is still living in, that he did do some repair work to.
Right. So the debt that was, at least that part of the debt, was for improvements to the Winnebago, which was ultimately granted to him.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. And I guess finally, the award of attorney's fees. Like I talked at the beginning, this marriage divorce took Doug for everything he has. He's literally living in a trailer out on his family's farm with barely a shirt on his back. And I just don't think this was an appropriate case for attorney's fees because it was very clear and evident at trial that Doug is incapable of holding a job at this time. He still suffers from severe mental health issues. And therefore, he has nothing to pay these attorney's fees with. Again, this marriage took everything he had.
What is your understanding of the evidence showing that Mary's ability?
I guess it would be just the opposite, Your Honor. There is no evidence that she couldn't work. There was no reason why she didn't work. There's no minor kids in the home. She had worked during the marriage, not very high-paying jobs. I think the evidence was $10 to $12 an hour usually, but she did work during the marriage. And then all of a sudden she decided not to. There was no evidence as to why. And again, that goes to the contribution of each parties to this marriage. My client worked tirelessly. Job, many, many hours, a stressful job. He gave his mental health to this marriage. And when he wasn't able to work, and she still didn't work. Instead, they chose to live off of what he had saved during that time that he was working for the telecommunications industry. And again, I keep coming back to, that's what makes these awards so unfair, is because of how much Doug put into this marriage. And I don't think it was accounted for the errors that I put forward in my brief. That's my error. And we're asking for the court to reverse.
Thank you. Good morning.
If it may please the court, Mr. Mushton. My name is Brad Dawson. I represent Mary Doolin in the proceedings here today before you. First of all, let's get the facts straight. There is a minor child affected by these proceedings. His name is Jackson. He was born in 2001, so he'd be 15 or 16 years of age at today's date. He lives with his mother. There was some comments regarding why she wouldn't go with her husband on this trip starting in January, going through July of 2014. She's got a minor child at home. That kid supposedly is in school based upon compulsory education laws. So it seems to me that it's a completely legitimate reason for not accompanying her husband on that trip. Granted, there are family members in the area, things of that nature, but she is the parent, so she did assume parental responsibilities, stayed home with her son. I think that's commendable.
Mr. Doolin didn't adopt that child, though, did he?
It's a biological child, as I understand.
Pardon?
It's a biological child, as far as I understand.
It's his child.
Yes. And you may be confused.
Was he born during the marriage?
Yes. 2001. The parties married in 1989.
Yeah, child custody, that wasn't an issue because the parties agreed to it beforehand, right?
Early on, Mr. Doolin had a different attorney than Mr. Mushkin, and that attorney and I created what we call the parent-created parenting plan. We submitted it to the trial court, had the trial court approve it as a temporary parenting plan, and then in the body of the parenting plan place language in there such that if there was no dispute at the time of trial, the court could go ahead and reapprove the parenting plan, make it a final parenting plan, and incorporate the same terms within its decree. That's why the court went ahead and reviewed the issues of alimony. That's why the court went ahead and reviewed the issues of child support, is because we do have a minor child affected by these proceedings. And I think my client should actually be commended for having stayed home instead of going on vacation for 6 months with her husband to take care of the needs of the child. When you look at his trip from January to July, the evidence in the record indicates that he went to a trucking seminar in Kentucky, I believe, stopped through Kansas and had some suspension work done on the trailer, had an awning installed on the trailer, and then went into the state of Arizona, supposedly in the Phoenix area. All of this time taking roughly 6 months of his life. Now, I don't have vendetta or problems with Mr. Doolin. I mean, I understand that he has mental health issues, but claiming that he deserves the greater or the lion's share of this marital estate because of that is not equitable for my client. Let's start with the court's determination of a date of valuation of the estate. Clearly, Judge Urbaum decided that he was going to value as of the time we filed the complaint. When we filed the complaint, though, you'll note that it sat inactive for roughly a year of time. No response was even filed to the complaint until July of the succeeding year, which would be July of 2015. Looking at the Harris case, when it comes to the wrongful dissipation or the dissipation of that marital assets during the period of irretrievable, during the period of time the marriage is going through its irretrievable stage, doesn't apply here. Mr. Doolin files a legal pleading in July of 2015 claiming that the marriage is not irretrievably broken. He's asking the court to dismiss my client's complaint for dissolution 1 year after the time she filed her complaint. Furthermore, when the court determines...
Do you think that's evidence that he was trying to save the marriage?
I know he was. Judge, I would not dispute that fact one iota. I believe he was trying to save the marriage. But when we go back and you've asked Mr. Mushkin about the four deposits and withdrawals from the account, I think it's important that you understand that it's a three-step process. Number one, this is a 401k. My client has no access to that account whatsoever. That's a retirement account. It's an individual account for Mr. Doolin himself. He has to order the withdrawal and then voluntarily places those funds in the joint checking account. When you look at the record, look at the transcript, they had some arrangement between themselves that I clearly don't understand all the intricacies of it, but they support each other from this joint account from roughly 2011, which is when he became sick, and it continues into July of 2015, if not beyond. So this account is like their job. It's generating all the income that they're enjoying so that they can pay their expenses and things of that nature. And it's important, at least in my mind, that we're talking about three withdrawals that occurred in 2014 and three withdrawals that occurred even before the complaint for dissolution of marriage was filed. I don't think that, number one, I don't think the evidence establishes that she did not use those monies for purposes not related to the marriage. And two, I don't think they were in the period of the irretrievable breakdown as claimed by appellant in his brief.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that your client did not work during this period of the marriage?
From 2011 to 2015? She was a substitute paraeducator, which means that she went into classrooms and assisted teacher, but she came only as when called. Additionally, if I remember, God, and you could correct me on this one, but if I remember the record correctly, I think she was paid by Mr. Doolin's family to remodel a home that they were occupying, and I think there was some consideration paid to her for that endeavor, if I recall the record correctly. But for the most part, neither one of them was what you and I would consider to be gainfully employed.
Was there evidence that she had disabilities or some problem that caused her not to be able to become employed?
Well, if we're going to talk about physical or mental disabilities, no, I don't believe the record would support that. But if you look at her employment history, I mean, she was an artist. Her degree was in art from the college. She worked in printing and she set up layup. Well, those jobs don't exist anymore because of the modern technology age. I mean, you don't hire a typesetter any longer, to my knowledge. You don't hire somebody to lay out an ad or anything of that nature. It's all computer generated. She, when they moved to Austin, decided that she liked this paraeducator, apparently, liked this paraeducator occupation because that's what she did when she was in Austin. And that's what she did, although sporadically, when they returned, to Frontier County, Nebraska. So it seems to me that her capacity earn is not near equivalent to Mr. Doolin's. I understand that Mr. Doolin is disabled, would not dispute that here before this court today. But I think when you look at the case on an overall basis, you have to be careful because they had kind of a hybrid relationship from the period of filing the complaint through 2015. They are paying their bills by withdrawing from Mr. Doolin's 401k account. Whether you and I consider that to be wise is not relevant here today. What's relevant here is that's what they did, and it was an informal arrangement. I see my time's up.
Nope, you have two more minutes.
Oh, I have two more minutes? And it seems to me that they continued that process even after the filing of the complaint and the filing of the answer because Mr. Doolin, the record establishes, doesn't even close this joint account until after Ms. Hall has filed his answer denying that the marriage is irretrievably broken. So from roughly 2011 to 2015, they're just spending this money out of this account to do whatever they do. Account gets closed, I believe, in July of 2015. No further access. Don't even know if the 401k is exhausted at that point. In my mind, it's not relevant. The joint account gets closed. My client comes to me. I have no money. We file their application for temporary orders regarding support with the district court in November of 2015, which is 4 months after the answer has been filed, and which is 16 months after the complaint for dissolution has been filed. Now, that's not my ordinary practice, and so I think the court can safely assume that the parties had an arrangement that I deem satisfactory, even though I wasn't happy about the dissipation of that one asset, that 401k, but it worked for them. So
at the time of filing, I think the savings account had like $56,000 in it, roughly.
The 401k,
you mean? The 401 yes, that I, had, right. But it had been transferred to the savings account. Maybe not. Anyway,
I
but
think
the
it was
dissipation
still 401k had money.
But the dissipation had occurred prior to that. Those
yes.
withdrawals to the cash box had
yes.
happened before the filing.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And they'd exhausted. I mean, in 2011, I believe the information before the court is there was roughly $310,000 in this 401k account. We come in July of 2014, there's what, $56,000, $59,000 left? These people had maintained a fairly decent standard of living for at least 3 years, living solely upon the earnings or the funds in the 401k account. Additionally, just as a final point, I think it's interesting that nobody's claiming that any portion of that 401k is non-marital. So in my opinion, it would be an account that each are equally entitled to. Any further?
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
You may step back. How much time do we take him over?
29 seconds.
Please add that to any rebuttal time that the appellant has left. What will that total?
I want to apologize for my miss. Oh, sorry.
How much time does he have?
57 seconds.
All right.
I want to apologize for misspeaking about the minor child. Absolutely correct. I've only worked, as Brad said, that I've worked on this marital estate issues, and that's what we're trying at
Mr.
the
Dawson?
Trial.
Mr. Dawson.
Mr. Dawson. Thank you, Your Honor. Any questions that I can ask? I don't think there's any other statements that I...
Was all of the marital property valued as of the date of the filing, or only the 401k?
I think that's a very good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. Originally, and I believe the record will bear this out, Mr. Dawson had filed a property statement with the court. But however, at trial, Mr. Dawson went back through each item and asked his client, what is the date of this item today? And that's the values that Judge Urbaum used in his marital division, is the values that were testified to that day by the parties, and those values were as of the date of trial. So there's even some inconsistency on the dates Judge Urbaum used to value these assets, and just another argument why they should have been valued at the date of trial.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate both of you being here this morning. The matter is deemed submitted and you are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That completes this session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. We've enjoyed being in greater Nebraska, and we look forward to coming back next year.
See you then.
Thank you. Thanks. It's going to take me a minute for you to stand up. All quiet?
Yes, all quiet.
That's good. And you, and you, and you didn't get a call about some vehicle that's parked in the parking lot that had a...
Didn't hear any tow trucks that smashed over there.
Okay.
Good, because it'd be an awful long walk back to Omaha.
Well, and
you... I'll get you in the back seat of my car.
Thank you. Both of us.
Yeah, yeah, both of us.
Yes, both of you.
Thank
right,
you again.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you coming out.
Home.
Pardon?
You too.